just Irish marriage. I can't afford a carriage, but you'll look sweet on the seat of a bicycle bill or two.
A firm favourite, first composed by Harry Dacre in 1892, part of Daisy Bell, with the subtitle Bicycle Built for Two, and sung here by Gerald Adams and the Variety Singers, opens our Serendipity section. In Serendipity today, we have a few miscellaneous articles for you. You may never have heard of Sir John and Lady Jean Wilson, but to many living in parts of Africa, they were life changers. You see, Sir John was blind and worked for the National Institute of the Blind, and in the late 1940s was sent to Ghana by the Colonial Office to assess how the blind were being treated. He discovered they were treated as pariahs, seen as useless, another mouth to be fed, and that was all. His wife Jean accompanied him, and she was his eyes, describing everything she saw and taking pictures with her camera.
So ingrained was the villagers' belief that blindness was a biological inevitability that Jean was viewed with fascination and wonder. She was the extraordinary one there, said John, because they believed that most of the world was blind, and here was Jean in her late 20s, and she could see. She was some sort of monster, and she had this strange thing called a camera. The photographs Jean took would be used in the couple's campaign to eradicate a disease called onchocerciasis that leads to permanent blindness and was caused by Black River flies.
Jean quickly realised that such a forbidding name would not capture the public's imagination, so she suggested river blindness as an easier name for this deadly disease. On their return to Britain, the Wilsons set about raising £40,000 to start their campaign and to send out two doctors to begin a programme of treatment and prevention. They gradually discovered that the problem was much more widespread, and surveys they conducted in East, West and Central Africa showed how rife issues such as trachomas, cataracts and nutritional blindness were. So they extended their campaign to tackle preventable blindness in Africa. Trachoma is a particularly painful, highly contagious eye disease, causing chronic conjunctivitis and eyelid scarring. The eyelashes also grow inwards into the eye, and if untreated, this causes corneal damage and eventually blindness.
Within a year, they'd received royal assent, formed national organisations in six countries, and become leading players in the global struggle to eliminate preventable blindness. They set up training centres to teach blind men to farm and started an integrated education project for blind children in Uganda after Jean had visited schools in America where blind and disabled children were integrated into normal schools, unlike in Britain. In 1986, their organisation gained the name, by which most people know it today, Sight Savers.
John met Jean when he came to her house as a lodger, and they married in 1944. Jean was John's rock. She has compensated for any shortcomings my blindness could have caused, said John, although he always referred to his disability as nothing more than a confounded nuisance. And never saw the accident that made him blind as tragic. It happened during a chemistry experiment at Scarborough High School for boys when John was 12. He was putting the blue flame from the Bunsen burner onto the test tube when it exploded. The chemicals had been wrongly labelled and it produced an explosive mixture. Bottles shattered and many of the pupils were showered with glass. One was blinded in one eye, but John was blinded in both.
When John joined the National Institute for the Blind, it was still stuck, he said, in a Victorian attitude to the blind. They were treated like charity cases, hidden away in workshops and given basket weaving or mattress stuffing jobs. The combination of fear, pity and discomfort were things John and Jean would try to combat in Africa. Sightsavers is still one of the leading blindness charities. It operates in more than 30 countries and in 2017 celebrated its billionth treatment for tropical diseases. To achieve this, the Wilsons travelled 50,000 miles a year for half a century. It was always a shared effort.
Sir John was knighted for his services to the blind in 1975, and Jean was appointed an OBE in the 1980s. John died in 1999, and Jean's death was announced in January this year, and she was 103. Sightsavers issued a statement on her death, saying that she will be hugely missed and praising her incredible legacy, which they are proud to continue. Both Egypt and Senegal have now officially eliminated trachoma, that painful, blinding disease which has affected communities for generations.
Miller's tale carries on with Protégé, aged 77. There has been a mill on the banks of the River Stour of Sturminster Newton since before the Norman Conquest. But finding a young apprentice able to continue its legacy has proved a grind. Peter Loosemore, aged 85, a master miller, has looked after the building in Dorset since 1994, bringing the water-powered milling machines back into action, but has struggled to find a younger person to take over the job. After a couple of candidates in their 40s and 50s failed to make the grade, Loosemore has finally found his young protégé, 77-year-old Ray Hall, a retired Royal Navy engineer. Hall, who sold aircraft parts and ran a corner shop after leaving the Navy, said he'd been looking for projects to keep him busy since the death of Beverly, his wife of 48 years, in 2018. Loosemore, whose grandfather began working at the mill aged 14 in 1894, said it was difficult to find an apprentice because young people were put off by the hard work and low pay. He said a couple of candidates in their 40s and 50s had shown an interest, but it did not work out because they lacked the enthusiasm for it. Ray is learning how to start and stop the mill, make adjustments to the machinery, and the role also involves cleansing, manning the shop, and doing guided tours. Hall, who served in the Falklands War on HMS Invincible, spends 4 days a week learning from his veteran boss. Sturminster Newton Mill is one of several ancient flour mills on the Stour recorded in Domesday Book, which was compiled in 1086. It is thought there may have been a mill on the site in Saxon times. The machinery runs every day. The mill is open and flour is produced on the second weekend of each month to be sold in the mill and museum shops.
Moving westwards from Sturminster Newton, we arrive at the Cerne Abbas giant. For more than a century, those looking after the giant have carried out the same back-breaking ritual every decade to maintain its white outline. Using pickaxes, National Trust staff and volunteers dig up every centimetre of the 460-metre outline before packing 17 tonnes of fresh chalk into the hillside colossus. However, warmer winters and wetter summers are causing algae growth to dull the figure's outline much more quickly. Luke Dawson, lead ranger for the Trust at West Dorset and Cranbourne Chase, said, "We are seeing more intense rainfall, which can increase water runoff and gradually wear away the chalk. So we're planning further monitoring to understand the impacts and how we might need to adopt, potentially, by rechalking more often." Dawson was 4 days into a gruelling 14-day rechalking effort, the first since 2019. The Trust is always trialling a new method to make the work easier on the rangers, specialists and trained volunteers. Instead of battering fresh hard chalk back into the cuttings, this year they're combining chalk powder and water in a cement mixture to create a putty plaster they can squidge into the outlines and allow to bake hard. Because it only happens every 7 to 10 years, there's a lot of excitement, Dawson said. If we have to do this rechalking more frequently, we might struggle to recruit volunteers. The Trust has 60 volunteers working in 2 shifts each day, but some have dropped out during the heatwave. Dawson said it was tough graft, adding, you have the hill to contend with, sloping at around 1 in 3, and once you have spades in the ground, it's not easy going. But it's not something we can shy away from. At 180 feet tall, the naked, club-wielding giant is Britain's largest chalk hill figure, dominating the view above Cerne Abbas. In 2021, the Trust commissioned analysis which revealed that the giant was probably carved in the late Saxon period, between 700 and 1100 AD. Research by the University of Oxford suggested he was carved as an image of Hercules and could have marked a muster station for West Saxon armies.